What is today's date? Is it the 18th?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so this is Scott Seifworth, and I'm talking with Judy Greenspan, and it is Tuesday, August 18, 2009, and it is about 10:22 Central Standard. And Judy, thanks so much.
Sure, no problem.
Okay, well, do you have thoughts, or do you want me to ask questions?
Ask away.
Okay.
I'm not sure about my questions.
Okay.
I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, the thing, you know, the piece that I can, the piece that you sent me,
yeah,
the beginning of Madison Gay Sisters,
mm-hmm,
could definitely be edited. There's a lot of, you know, sort of fluff. I don't think you need every single thing about every, you know, that I put in there. It's almost like what we had for dinner the night that we... But the thing that I'm thinking about is that really, yes, it was the beginning of Madison Gay Sisters, but even more, it was really the beginning of the Madison lesbian movement.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can trace back, unless you want to say... I mean, there was a parallel social scene going on,
mm-hmm,
but Madison Gay Sisters sort of marked the beginning of the political lesbian movement.
Mm-hmm.
And Madison, the one that was going to be out, the one that was going to challenge, the one, you know, the one that was going to go to demonstrations, and the one that was going to later on, what was that, open up a bookstore or you know, open up a bar.
Oh, yeah, Room of One's Own and Lysistrata.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And really, I think you can sort of look at the birth of all those things back to when we sort of said we're coming out as women.
Yeah.
Non-lesbian.
Yeah. I recently, a couple weeks ago, I interviewed Pam Green. I don't know if you know that name. But
you know, it doesn't ring a bell, but...
She was a student here the year before, a grad student, and was one of the only women who was in the predecessor to GLF that was, I think they called it Madison Alliance for Homosexual Equality.
Wow.
The year before.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was her and this woman named Mary Dugan, like the two women.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, it was a smaller group at that time. Like, it started out, it was just, like, you know, 20 people.
Right.
And so, her impression early on when it was just small, it didn't feel as, the maleness didn't feel as much, you know,
uh-huh,
when it was smaller. Everybody was just, you know, I think as it grew, it felt... But she was saying, where I was going with this was, you know, she was trying to get women to join. She even wrote an editorial in the Daily Cardinal you know, implore women to join the group, and it elicited not a single new person.
Wow.
And what's your thought about that? How, where lesbian, you know?
I don't know. I mean, when we started, there were only about, you know, I think there were just about a dozen women that came to our first meeting.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. Maybe the time was more right when we did it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the fact that we did it, you know, I don't know. It's a good question. Did they try to bring women to that group?
Yeah.
Or did they try to organize a lesbian group?
Nope, they tried to bring women.
I think that's what the problem was.
Yeah.
My impression was that there were women who dropped in and out of GLF,
mm-hmm,
you know, who came, you know, for a meeting and then looked around and saw all men and decided to leave.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't, I mean, if you're looking for a social scene, it wasn't the place to go.
Mm-hmm.
If you were looking to connect with other women, just politically or emotionally or whatever, it was not the place to go.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that the men were mean. I mean, they, you know, historically, gay men have always gotten along with women. I mean, straight women, gay women, doesn't matter. But it wasn't a place where women could stand out,
mm-hmm,
could have their needs met, could talk about the you know, because I think there are other problems that come into play when you talk about lesbians in terms of, you know, then you have, on top of homophobia, you have the oppression of women.
Mm-hmm.
And So there's a there's sort of a particularity of oppression that could not be dealt with in a larger group.
Yeah, in a male group at that time.
That's what I mean. In a predominantly male group, and the men, you know, the men were just sort of basically striking. They had their own needs. They were striking out on their own. They were doing whatever, and their social scene was so different.
Yeah.
Than the women's scene. So, and we didn't have a women's scene. None of the bar. I mean, the pirate ship was all men.
Yeah. And what was the straight women's movement like at the time in Madison?
Very closeted. I was involved in the straight women's movement.
Yeah.
I was involved
or the women's movement, I mean.
Yeah, but it was the straight women's movement. I was involved in, when I came to Madison, I was involved in what the aftermath of Students for a Democratic Society became. It was called the Bobby Seale Brigades.
Ah.
And we had a study group, and part of what we studied was, you know, women's liberation and women's oppression. And we, you know, had speakers and things like that, but the issue of gays and lesbians was just not considered a political enough issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and honestly, I mean, I don't know, it was sort of like, there was a disconnect. The straight movement was so fearful of lesbian and gay people,
mm-hmm.
or of what it would mean to embrace the lesbian and gay movement, that they just set up a wall.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I literally lost a lot of friends when I came out, and I was no different. It's not like I changed. It's not like I went, you know, I was sucked up by aliens and then came back a totally different person.
Right.
But all of a sudden, people wouldn't talk to me.
Wow. Yeah.
Same people I had run through the streets, been tear gassed with, you know, and it took a while. It really, for some of them, it took a couple of years.
Wow. So their own education process just... That took a long time.
Particularly some of the women. I mean, some of the women were very personally threatened.
Wow.
Because it's a whole question of, you know, gosh, I mean, I worked with this person and she's really a lesbian. What does that mean for me? Is it contagious? You know, I mean.
Yeah. Because there was just, I mean, I take for granted that, you know, where we are now. And, you know, and there, I assume there's just, you know, such a lack of information.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, and there was just a tremendous amount of homophobia and fear, and, you know, it was just one issue that nobody wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
When I said the elephant in the closet or something like that, that's sort of what it was.
Yeah. And you said that a lot of you who were sort of the more politically active, you know, lesbians had come from other... Like the Vietnam movement.
Right.
Or other...
Came from the anti-war movement, the student movement, I mean, I was involved when... I mean, I... Coming out in Madison was a difficult... I mean, it was difficult from a lot of different respects. But politically, it was difficult because... I had come from a place where I was very involved in, at that time there were three Black Panther Party members who were on trial in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee Three,
mm-hmm.
and there were demonstrations on campus, there was the anti-war movement on campus, there was many, many different kinds of demonstrations, there was student labor strikes. I mean, in April of 1971, I was arrested with three other people. During a student labor strike action, we did a food riot in support of striking cafeteria workers who were trying to be recognized as a union.
Oh, was that the dorm?
Uh-huh.
One Mulo.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and we were arrested, and we were actually, this was like, oh, not April. It was May.
Mm-hmm.
It was May 1971, and it was right after May Day on campus.
Yeah.
And May Day on campus was a total, like, I don't think I've ever had been tear gassed so much. No, I mean, it really, it was people running around down by the lake and being, and ambushing and being ambushed by police and being tear gassed. And there was even people breaking windows. There was even a point where they were shooting guns in the air. I mean, it was like, You know, it was linked to national demonstrations that were happening. That was at the same time in Washington, D.C. What they did is they did a mass arrest, and they put everybody in RFK Stadium.
Yeah.
I think people sued and got money after that. And, well, in Madison, we were basically rebelling. And so the police were very upset. So a few days after that is when I got arrested in the student labor strike, and they basically threw the book at us. I mean, it was almost unheard of for students to be sentenced to jail time.
Yeah.
But we were.
Really?
We were all sentenced to jail time.
Yeah. And that was after the May 71 May Day.
Yeah,
because I've been in the Cardinal, looking at the Cardinal papers a little bit, and it seemed like the protest even continued sort of day by day for a few days after that.
Yeah. Oh, it was a whole week.
Yeah, it was a whole week.
Yeah, it was very, and within that, we did a smaller protest, like make May Day Gay Day.
Okay.
And we joined all the anti-war demonstrations, but we joined it from sort of a queer perspective. I mean, at that point, we called it a lesbian perspective, but you really look at it sort of as queer.
Yeah. And what did that mean to make, well, how did you try and make May Day Gay Day, and what did you do? Do you have memories of this?
Well, what we did was, what I specifically remember is Lesbians Love Madame Bin, who was one of the leaders of the National Liberation Front. Actually, she was one of the leaders in North Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
She was one of the people, one of the deputies under Ho Chi Minh. And we just wanted to be identified with her. Mm-hmm. We wanted her to be identified with our liberation movement, and we wanted to be identified with the Vietnamese liberation movement. And we marched in all the, you know, we marched in all the... all the anti-war marches, we had a contingent during May Day.
Uh-huh. And with signs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I don't remember. You know, I think, I don't know. I've carried so many different signs in anti-war marches over the years. You know, I can't remember. I do remember that we had a banner, lead banner, about lesbians loving Madame Bin.
Yeah. I think I have the memoirs of a tired lesbian in front of me.
You do, huh?
I do. I got it out for this. And I think in there it mentions one of these signs. Let me look for a minute. Go left, go gay, go pick up the gun.
That was one of our chants. That was a gay chant.
Oh, that was a gay chant.
Go left, go gay, go pick up the gun, yeah.
Pick up the gun.
You have to understand, people at that time were chanting everything from pigs to the left, pigs to the right, stand up, sit down, fight, fight, fight.
Uh-huh.
And we were, and I mean, this is on the the main chants would be something like that, or would be, you know, the song On Wisconsin?
Yeah.
On Wisconsin, time to smash the state.
Right.
Everybody. So saying, you know, go left, go gay, go pick up the gun was not, you know, was just in line with everything else. So that everybody was, it was not like we were more radical than anybody else. We just tried to spice it up.
Yeah. Go left, go straight.
No, gay.
Go gay. Go pick up the gun. What does that mean, go pick up the gun?
This is, it's hard if you haven't been through the 60s. During the 60s, the anti-war movement was a gamut of political, you know, it was a spectrum of political perspectives. There were people who like John Lennon and Yoko Ono would be chanting and swaying, all we are saying is give peace a chance. And then there were people who would chant, ho, ho, Ho Chi Minh, the NLF is going to win.
Yeah.
Which means the liberation struggle in Vietnam is what we identified with.
Yeah.
And I was part of that grouping that supported the liberation struggle against U.S. colonialism.
Yeah.
So go left, go gay, go pick up the gun means we want to be part of the revolution, too.
Got it.
Yeah. It didn't mean we were going to pick up the gun. But remember, this is all in the context of the Black Panther Party.
Yeah.
And they were picking up the gun.
Yeah.
There was the Vietnamese, and they had guns, and they were fighting for their country. And within that context, it was just our way of chanting and showing solidarity. It was a very radical time. Remember, I mean, this was right after the bombing of the Army Math Research Center.
Oh, right.
So, you know, and actually when I came to Madison, I got there, you know, probably a week or two right after the bombing had happened. The campus was like a ghost town. It was like covered with, plastered with all of these wheat-pasted posters, you know, justifying the bombing, and people were freaked out, and, you know, they were looking for the New Year's gang, and so you know, this was Madison at sort of, I wouldn't say at the peak, it was sort of ebbing a little bit, the radical activity after the I think the bombing of the Army Math Research Center sort of to some extent put a damper on a lot of things.
Yeah, yeah.
Got scared and all that.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to, looking at this article.
I wrote that, right? Memoirs of Retired Lesbian.
You did. You did.
Okay.
I can send you a copy if you want me to.
No, it's okay. I'm afraid.
I'm afraid. Don't be afraid. It's very good.
Oh, it's good? Oh, good. I'm glad.
You
tease me about that.
What?
Why I was tired.
Well, do they really?
Yeah, but it was all in jest.
Okay. One of the things that you talk about here is this sort of about not having any counseling services.
Oh, yeah.
And how did that work? Who decided to...
Well, okay, there was a hotline.
Yeah.
And the hotline was for anything. It was for gay. It was for straight, mostly. You know, it was for, like, psychiatric service, runaways. There would be a phone number that people would call.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I did is I think I knew somebody who was on it, and I said, look, if anybody calls and wants to talk, you know, a woman particularly, I think I limited myself to women, but I'm not sure, you know, who thinks they might be gay or thinks, you know, they have feelings for women and they need someone to talk to, then you can call me. You can have them call me. So basically I then became very, very, you know, it was very public.
Yeah.
And I would meet them, I would do some phone counseling, but mostly we'd meet for coffee.
Yeah. Wow. In this Memoirs of a Retired Lesbian, you say that you would sometimes get up to 3 calls a day.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Well, you know, once... The whole thing is that once we became visible,
mm-hmm.
then people began to realize that they have people to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
It almost, increased the need. You know, it sort of opened up the bottle that had been... all capped up.
Wow.
And so people did. People had there were people calling, coming, you know, people began to see Madison as sort of this gay mecca. And it was, in a sense, in terms of, you know, I mean, sort of the San Francisco of Wisconsin, I guess.
Yeah.
A place where people could go because they were coming from all these small towns.
Wow.
Where there was no support, where they really felt vulnerable.
Yeah. So people would come in from smaller towns just to talk to you. Sometimes
they would call me. More people would call me, but also a lot of people came to school in Madison.
Yeah.
From these small towns.
Yeah. This hotline number, was that a university hotline number or a city?
It's a good question. It might have been. I don't know.
Yeah.
Cannot remember.
Yeah.
And I can't remember why I even thought to do it, or why how it even began.
Yeah. We're just wondering.
Yeah. It could have been also, you know, I mean, one of the things that we used to do, people don't do it as much, is that, you know, when we'd put out flyers and you'd list a phone number, if you didn't have an office, you would list somebody's home number.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling the number on the flyers was my number.
That was your home number.
I'll bet you it was.
Yeah.
For the meeting. So it probably came off of that, and then people began calling.
For the meeting. And it looks like even for some of the, like, Maddie, the Gay Sisters stuff, it's your Brierley Street address. Is that right?
Yeah. Brierley Street. Yeah.
Sorry.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably. I lived in a house with about 8 women, 8 or 9 women. Hmm. I mean, it was both straight and gay.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, let's...
But the other thing, I mean, the thing that, you know, that Madison Gay Sisters didn't stay Madison Gay Sisters for very long.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it stayed for 6 months or maybe 8 months or something like that before we realized that we had to take on the word lesbian.
Yeah, and describe why.
We sort of felt, well, we had a big discussion in the group, and I remember there were some women who didn't want to take on the word lesbian. They felt like they more identified as gay. And those tended to be the women who were not sort of plugged into the feminist movement. I remember many of us were coming out of the feminist movement, and we wanted to differentiate ourselves from the gay men. We wanted to have our own movement. We wanted to have our own group, and we wanted to embrace, you know, the whole history of lesbos and all that. And And lesbians just seemed a more woman-identified term.
Yeah.
And this is probably, as I remember, around the time that Lesbian Woman was being written, and, you know, it was sort of, you know, we were sort of feeling more a part of a national movement.
Mm-hmm. One of the things in this, in the memoirs article, which you sort of have laid out by sort of chunks of time, you know,
right,
is that after the May Day anti-war parade, then, like, one of the next things you say that happens early that summer is you say lesbians began to become involved in the Madison women's movement. And then it says...
I think there was a women's center that opened up.
Okay.
So that's why.
And if there's arguments... Do you remember anything about this and what that meant?
I remember attending large meetings and trying to carve out a space for lesbian women,
mm-hmm,
within the larger women's movement.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember much more than that. I think that, you know, this is what happened. I mean, what happened was we did have a transition. We sort of transitioned away from the gay movement,
yeah,
and went more into the women's movement.
Mm-hmm.
Not that we were necessarily welcomed with open arms, but
mm-hmm,
there was more of an opening.
Yeah. That was the sense I got from the memoirs articles, that around the time that, you know, the summer of 71, that Madison Gay Sisters and GLF move into 10 Langdon.
Uh-huh.
And you break from GLF.
Uh-huh.
And the group sort of is, and it seems like the group is sort of doing, you know, is strong at that time, in that summer. And I'm wondering, and so how, so do we sort of shared space, but we didn't do things with the GLF, is that right?
Right.
So it wasn't okay.
And it wasn't a total break. We were still, I was still going, I was appearing on panels. What happened in the fall of that year,
mm-hmm,
is when I think we started doing speaking in schools.
Yeah.
More.
Yeah.
I think we did it probably, we didn't do it as much in the spring, but I think we did it in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess of 71, right?
Yeah.
I'm trying to remember. Anyway, so we started going out and speaking to different, you know, we went to other colleges in the area. We went to schools, and so I always went because I thought it was really important. If a couple of us didn't do it, then women wouldn't have been represented on the panels.
Yeah. And who was there? Who was the other woman? Was there anybody else who was as out as you?
Well, Sarah Hummel was pretty. There were women who were out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't ask me who they were. I can't remember. I was pretty out there.
Yeah.
I was pretty out there, but there was a whole group of us. That was. You know, that summer, I played. Interesting. That summer I played softball.
Yeah.
And I played softball with in a league that had a lot of lesbians, and I played on a team that had a lot of lesbians, but they were not lesbians who would join us for demonstrations.
Mm-hmm.
They were lesbians who would join us for softball.
Yeah.
And I thought it was important to sort of reach out to those women.
Yeah.
And those were the women who you would say, "Oh, they're the apolitical intervals." But they were the working class dykes,
yeah,
who had been putting up with homophobia and anti-lesbian sentiment for many more years than me.
Yeah. So there was already softball culture.
Oh yeah.
In town.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Of course. Mm-hmm. And probably had been way before I discovered it, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it was always, it's traditionally always one place that lesbian women can meet people and feel comfortable.
I know, it's so interesting, and there's so little written about that. It's, I think, fine.
It's always been a lot of novels.
Yeah.
You know, meeting your lover at a softball game or something like that, but it's not a lot, probably.
Yeah. As somebody who tries to teach this, you know, if he wants, you know, it's just funny, you know, trying to find. Yeah, novels, that's a great, I need to. Right.
Oh, well, when I was in Madison, one of the things I did do, I was only in college for a very short period of time, and I dropped out because I was doing so many other things, organizing and all this.
Mm-hmm.
And it was expensive. I was paying out-of-state tuition, and it just had no relevance
mm-hmm.
to the rest of my life. But one of the things I did do before I quit was that I took a graduate course with Elaine Rubin. I have no idea if she's still there or not, but... Mm-hmm. And I was a freshman, and I was taking graduate courses. I didn't really follow what you were supposed to do. And I wrote a 40-page paper on lesbians in literature.
Yeah.
Well, lesbian novels, basically. I went and took as many novels as I could find and did a literary analysis.
Wow. So, that's even before Barbara Greer and the lesbian in literature.
Maybe.
Is it?
I don't know. It wasn't, 71? Was it before she did it? There was some stuff then. I remember reading some stuff from Del Mar and Phyllis Lyons. Their magazine.
Okay.
But the biggest, the most fun I had was going around to all the used bookstores.
Oh, yeah.
And purchasing these books. They were so hard to find.
Yeah.
They were all out of print.
Yeah.
You could only, since then they've reissued a lot of books, but
yeah.
Getting a hold of the first copy of, my first copy of The Price of Salt was almost impossible.
Really?
Oh, yeah, because now it's been reissued so many times.
Yeah.
And this is before Alma Rood Song wrote Patience and Sarah and all that.
So. Yeah. Patience and Sarah. So with, anything else you want to say about 10 Langdon and what you guys used to do there?
I don't remember that much about 10 Langdon. I'm so sorry. Just remember sitting outside of 10 Langdon, having arguments with gay men about their sexism. That was one of the things I remember.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was young. The movement was young. We were all very impatient. We didn't appreciate a lot of the campiness of gay male culture
mm-hmm.
and the way men referred to each other
mm-hmm.
and the way probably a lot of gay men still refer to each other.
Yeah.
So we used to get into big arguments about the way they referred to each other and things like that.
Marry this and marry that? Or
no, cunt.
Oh, no, really?
Oh, yes.
Wow.
Yo, no, marry was nothing. That's fine.
Yeah.
You want to call her Mary? It's fine. Call her Mary? Yeah.
Wow.
No, cunt and pussy.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So it really sort of like, it rankled all the feminism of all of us.
Yeah.
But I often found myself expressing it quite loudly.
Yeah.
And it was one of the reasons, we started out actually having joint dances,
mm-hmm.
and one of the reasons why we decided to have women's dances.
Oh, so tell that story.
No, but I mean, the only thing to tell is just that we just found that there were just the sort of inherent, I don't know, the inherent anti-woman character. I mean, the fact that some of the gay men, and you know, this is a different time period.
Mm-hmm.
This is also sort of the pre-AIDS. You know,
yeah.
I think back at all the men who I knew who were so into all of this stuff, and I know, unfortunately, probably 60-70% of them are dead.
Yeah.
Because of the lifestyle that they led. But anyway, there was a lot of partying, a lot of sex, a lot of taking on, there was some cross-dressing. There were a lot of men, you know, there was sort of like the beginning of the radical fairy movement.
Oh, okay.
And these were the very political gay men who decided that they really liked to wear skirts and dresses and camp it up and that type of thing. But beyond that, there was a whole layer of gay men who loved to cross-dress. But not only did they like to cross-dress, they just really liked to, take women's behavior to the extreme.
Mm-hmm.
And the language that they used, I found incredibly offensive. And many of us found very offensive. And so So we would go to the dances, and we would sort of be repulsed. And we just decided that we really needed to have our own dancers.
Mm-hmm.
And then the hardest part was keeping out the men, not just the straight men who wanted to wander in, but some of the gay men who felt that they had a right to go to our dances.
Wow, so you would advertise gay sisters' dances, and men would feel like they, it was appropriate to come?
Yes. I think it was lesbian women dances. To hell with the gay sisters thing. I think it was just, you know, women's dances or lesbian women. It might have just been women's dances.
Yeah. I found from 71, summer of 71, like August of 71, and you guys had announcements in the Capital Times for these gay sisters dances.
Did we?
You did? I was so surprised.
That is very funny.
Yeah. And they printed them. I was like, you know, of course the Journal didn't, but like the Cap Times.
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
At 10 Langdon.
Yeah.
So they started out in the summer sort of as mixed, and then the women were like, this is
right, crazy.
And okay.
And let's do our own.
Yeah.
And we didn't do them as often.
And were the gay men, so why were the men crashing? Why did the gay men...
They liked being with lesbians.
Yeah.
They identified as women. I mean, it's probably, you know, it's the early transgender movement, but we didn't have a name for it.
Mm-hmm. And the really offensive stuff that some of them would say, is there an example of?
They would just call each other cunts.
Yeah, like that.
Call each other pussy. Hey, but they would be talking to each other. They weren't like talking to women, but they were talking around women. So it just got, you know, for those of us who were so... We were very... It's a very different movement now. I mean, I see a lot of the young queer people, and I know they have a totally different hit on things. And the feminism is not so strong.
No.
People are into objectifying each other. All the things that we just got so uptight about,
mm-hmm.
young people seem to do all the time now. And it's part of the game.
Mm.
And it's sort of also part of it that you don't know, is this person male, female, gay, straight, queer?
Mm-hmm.
The labels were not as important.
Yeah, they're really
ambiguous.
Not.
Ambiguity is an important part.
Yeah.
In our movement, it wasn't. It was really important that we were recognized as lesbians, as
mm-hmm.
strong, you know, as strong women.
Mm-hmm.
And so, it was definitely just a different time.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow!
And it was important that we not be called men. Well, that's the whole thing, that we were dykes. You know, we finally, after a while, we took on the terminology dykes, and we were proud to be dykes.
Mm-hmm.
We there were all these songs, I enjoy being a dyke, and all these different things, and it's a very different movement now.
Yeah. Was that Lisa Benn?
I enjoy being a dyke. No, somebody wrote, I don't remember who wrote it. Somebody took all the words, I enjoy, what? I enjoy being a guy.
Yes, that's right.
I enjoy being a guy. They took the tune and they went, I enjoy being a dyke.
A dyke, yeah. That's awesome. So what else do we say about this going to integrate the bars? Can you talk about that a little more?
Well, at that time, the only bar in the city that I knew of was the Pirate Ship.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that changed within the next year or so. And maybe this is the only one that was on campus, because I didn't know about the Stoplight.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know about the Stoplight at the time. But when you go into the Pirate Ship, it was all men. Women, they were very unfriendly. The bartender, who was a woman, was incredibly unfriendly to any woman who walked into the bar. They were all carded. It just wasn't a very comfortable place. And we were young, and we liked to dance, and we were liked to be in people's face. And being in your face, apparently we like to be in the face of whoever we can be in the face of. So we would be in the face of straight people, we would be in the face of closeted gay people.
Really?
Well, yeah. I mean, there were certain things that we did that really, when I ran for school board,
mm-hmm.
I was ostracized I was fired from my bartending job. At the Stoplight, which was a gay bar.
Wow.
And they told me, and people used to come in before I was fired, they used to come in and argue with me, why are you doing this? You're going to create a backlash. We don't need to be out. We're so happy living the way we are. Why are you running openly as a lesbian board and causing waves and problems?
Wow, they would come and find you at work and say that.
Well, these were people who go to the bar.
Oh.
People, regulars at the bar, were really hostile.
Wow.
And within 2 weeks, they fired me.
Wow. Because?
Because I was running, I was a public figure, and I was working at their bar. And so therefore, then everyone would know their bar was gay, even though everybody did know their bar was gay.
And didn't that lawyer own that bar?
I don't remember who. Somebody. Yeah, I mean, whoever owned it was gay.
I thought it was McManus that owned that bar.
I don't know who owned it.
I can't remember.
Just know it was a place. It was a quiet, really, bar for old gays and lesbians.
Really?
Tired old gays and lesbians. Nice being in the closet.
Was it men, too?
It was a generation. It was a whole generation gap there.
Really?
Yeah.
So the young women didn't go there?
Oh, what happened was when I was bartending, yeah, they all came. We certainly changed the place.
Yeah.
At least the nights that I was working, yeah. I'm sure they didn't like that either.
Wow. And was it mostly a women's place?
No. It was men and women.
Okay.
It was men and women. Mostly men.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
There was no place for women.
Yeah. And so when you guys would go out... And so, like, at the pirate ship, why... It seems so funny that this woman would like gay men and not lesbians.
Really? Well, I mean, historically, I've always seen that there's this sort of layer of straight women who like being with gay men, but don't particularly like to be with lesbians.
Oh. Okay. Wow.
I'm sure there are many psychological reasons for that. I don't need to go into that.
No. And then, so when you would go to straight bars, the purpose was, like, well, what would you do? Was there a plan, or?
Yeah, we would go in a group, and we would, one place had a jukebox, and we just played some music and just started dancing.
Mm-hmm.
And people would come up to us and give you really, I remember a couple of pretty angry confrontations. It never came, I don't think it ever came to fighting.
Mm-hmm. But how would it go?
People would come over and start arguing with us, and in one place I remember we were dancing and they turned the music off and told us to leave. And we did.
Patrons or the bar?
The bar.
Owners?
The bar. The
really?
Bar owner. That happened in a couple of places.
Mm-hmm.
You have your own place. Go. Not for you.
Really?
Something like that, yeah.
Wow. And yeah.
I mean, the attitude at the time was homosexuality was an illness. It was not something that was healthy. And so, who wants it in their bar?
Yeah. 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 I wonder if we should talk about the Thanksgiving conference of 71.
Oh, boy. What was that? You're going to remind me of something. What was that?
Well, it seems like the GLF had this sort of, like, big conference at the Union in 19 during Thanksgiving. The Union would shut down, you know, for Thanksgiving.
Okay.
And they rented it out, and they had this big, like, Midwest queer conference. And they invited, like, gays came from, like, all over the U.S., apparently, to this conference. But, of course, in the planning of it, they really didn't invite women,
right.
Include women.
Right.
And...
Did we go?
I think you guys said, well, you went, and then, you know, we're like, what, this is crazy.
We were upset because we weren't included.
Yeah, and then so did I think there were, you know... found ways to, you know, make a statement that this isn't
right
working.
You know what? Honestly and truthfully, somebody with a better memory than me, I don't remember it, but that was typical of what would happen.
Mm-hmm.
Because we weren't included.
Yeah.
And that's part of the reasons why we went off on our own.
Yeah.
Because we weren't one of the boys.
Yeah.
Or one of the guys.
Yeah.
And we really did need... I mean, that's... But frankly, that's sort of the history of the gay movement. It's not just Madison. I mean, it's why today the Castro in San Francisco is still all about, and not just men, it's white gay men.
Right.
In fact, this year the transgender community, which usually has a march to the Castro mm-hmm. in San Francisco, decided to go to the Mission, to the Latino community, because they felt that was more of their community.
Wow.
Now, that's a statement.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's still happening. It's not unusual.
Yeah. Wow.
I mean, the men are, you know, there are more of them. They have better jobs, more social recognition. And we were sort of, you know, young upstarts. We didn't have that much recognition. It was a while before. I mean, I think after I left, more of the sort of the academic women began to come out. And, you know, I mean, I think Liz Estrada sort of broke that wide open, mm-hmm. that more women from the university and women with stature or whatever. But we were just these radicals.
And that was later. I mean, that was 78.
Yeah.
We had people.
There was probably other things that happened in between. But I left, so I don't know. Sorry.
Well, people had time to do their own work, you know.
Hmm?
Maybe. Well, people did their own work, too, probably, you know.
Yeah.
Time. In reading this, the memoirs piece.
Uh-huh. Maybe you should send it to me.
Okay.
Can you?
Yeah.
You can scan it or something
yeah.
like that? Oh, great.
I'll make
a scanner. That would be wonderful.
I'll make a copy at work.
Okay.
Because it's from Whole Women, so it's this huge...
Yeah. Yeah. I was in the collective for a while.
Well, hey, maybe we should talk about that. How did that get started? And Scarlet...
Scarlet Letter?
Yeah, how did...
What's that? Oh, please.
Because Scarlet Letter was just lesbian... only, is that right? And Whole Woman was...
Whole Woman was a women's collective.
Women's.
The women were both straight and gay.
Okay.
And it was this group of women who lived, cannot remember the name, on Few Street?
Yeah.
And they were... God, I can remember working... hours and hours in their basement on this newsletter, on this newspaper.
Yeah.
It started out, I think, as a magazine. I think it started as a... It changed format.
Uh-huh.
Now, the Scarlet Letter, I don't remember, was that before or after? Maybe it was after. It sounds familiar, but...
I think before.
I think it was before. I think Whole Woman... I think some of the people that put out Scarlet Letter went to do Whole Woman.
Okay.
But I couldn't... Yeah.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure it was before. I think that was 71, and then I think that
72, I think, was Whole Woman.
Yeah.
And I joined. I actually joined it. Yeah, I worked on it for about 7 or 8 months or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I did. And you're right. I mean, I really sort of left. I sort of really left I brought the lesbian movement over to the women's movement. By then, by 72, we were already there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that was a great publication.
Yeah, it was. It was good. Yep. No, they were very talented. The women were really great writers.
Yeah.
And they saw themselves as writers.
Yeah.
It was actually quite a professional.
Was that a monthly? I'm trying to remember.
I think it was monthly.
Yeah.
I don't think we worked on any more than that. Already too much.
So one of the things, let me check my tape here. I'm going to have to, can I turn this tape?
Yo.
Okay,
yeah.
give me just a sec. I saw some other names. Yeah, I talked to Barbara recently.
Blanche is dead. I know she died, I think, of breast cancer or something.
Yeah, young, too, in the 80s, maybe, huh?
Yeah.
Do you know Barbara Wexler?
Oh, yeah, Barbara Wexler. Uh-huh.
Is she still around?
Who knows?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, because she took
I
all these...
I remember her.
She took all these great pictures. I'm dying to get...
Yeah, she was the photographer.
Yeah, I want copies of these things.
What about Linda? What was her name? I don't remember.
Linda.
No, not Linda. You told me.
Oh, Lynn Levy.
Yeah, Lynn. Yeah.
Is she around? She is, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I should talk to Lynn.
You should talk to her, yeah.
And Julie Price's name comes up a lot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I vaguely remember.
Yeah.
I am such, you know, the older you get, Scott, the less you remember. This is what I... It's true.
Yeah. One of the things, so I'm in reading memoirs, one of the things you describe in this, it seems like in the first year, there's a lot of, especially, and in the summer, the way you describe this, the first summer of 71, there's sort of this high enthusiasm.
Uh-huh.
And then in the second year, it seems like you talk a lot about how there's a lot of women just passing through the group, coming for a meeting or two.
Right.
And just never any consistency.
Right.
Can you talk about that?
You know, we went through different periods. And at first, when we all came out and we did a lot of political things together, and not everybody did it. You know, there were some women who clearly joined for social reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, it seemed like the group sort of became like a social group. So people would come, they'd meet somebody, get in a relationship, and then we wouldn't see them again.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'd just be passing through just to see, oh, who's out there. And it sort of lost its drive for a period of time.
Lost its drive, meaning?
It began with a bang, and
yeah.
It sort of just lost. It began that initial enthusiasm began to peter out.
Okay.
And part of it was we had to sort of build something. And it was probably not that clear what we should be building at different times.
Mm-hmm.
And for some of us, it wasn't enough to just... And for me, I mean, after a certain point, it was just not enough to be this sort of... Oh, I don't know how to say it. Social network, I guess.
Yeah. And if you, and is that what most people wanted?
I wouldn't say most. I would say the people who passed through certainly wanted that.
Yeah.
We're looking more for just sort of a social hookup.
Yeah. Because it seems like there sort of is like, so like through spring and summer of 72, there's this, you know, this sort of a lot of people passing through.
Yeah.
And then the fall of 72, you guys decided just to dissolve the group.
To dissolve the group?
Yeah. And then you go to sort of a coffee house format. Or you form a coffee house.
Really? So glad you would know this.
Well, this is what...
Who told you this?
You did in this article.
Who knows what that means?
It says, well, yeah, I guess it was part of experimenting with a different structure. Like, there's a feeling that that current structure just wasn't working.
Right. The weekly meetings weren't working.
Yeah.
The people, it was too much. And there was no, we were doing things for a while. We would have, like, a topic, you know, we would meet, we had, like, a little planning group that would meet, and we'd try to, like, have something we would talk about or maybe something that we would read, but it was very hard sustaining the group.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly after people came out and, okay, now that we're out, now what?
Yeah.
Because part of it was just reaching a point of being comfortable.
Yeah.
Or finding some, and there began to be things that people could work on. You know, different, there could be, you know, you could organize dances, you could go be on the speakers, you could go, do different things.
Yeah.
But a coffee, huh? It vaguely rings a bell, but I'm sorry. It's blank. It's a total blank.
Okay.
You better send me this article.
Okay, I'm going to send it to
just
you.
For my own.
Okay.
I could go digging in my shed, but it'll take forever for me to dig in my shed.
No, I'm happy to send it. Make sure I write down your address before we go.
Oh, you can't email it?
It's too big to scan.
Oh, of course. Of course it's too big. It's newspaper.
Yeah, it's whole woman.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm sure I have it. Okay, mail me a copy. That would be wonderful.
So at the beginning, like, when people talk about consciousness raising, like, is that what we were doing at some right at the beginning?
I think so. Yeah, definitely what we were doing is consciousness raising.
And if we had to describe for people who didn't live in the era what consciousness raising was, can you put words to that?
Consciousness raising is... Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, okay, there were two things. One was consciousness raising. One was, you know, when we would read an article and we would try to discuss it and try to reach some sort of consensus on it and expand our own consciousness on it. That's sort of what consciousness raising, you know, consciousness raising in the women's movement is you would read articles.
Mm-hmm.
If you were a Marxist group, you might read Engels. If you were a feminist group, you might read Gloria Steinem or Del Mar and Phyllis Lyons or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would discuss it. But it was also important for our own personal support in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't just consciousness raising. It was sort of we needed to be with each other.
Yeah.
It was such a, and that's the whole thing, is that I would say for at least the first 6 or 8 months, maybe even longer, just being in a room with lesbians was like, none of us could believe it was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us, like myself, had gone through all of high school wanting to be out, and then finally getting enough courage to do that.
Yeah.
So it took a very long time for me to, and coming to grips with, you know, in those days, I love to know how young people react to coming out these days, because those of us who came out a long time ago came out with a lot of baggage and a lot of homophobia.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of self-hatred.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that having Madison Gay Sisters and then Madison Lesbians and just being active, just being vocal, just every time I would speak, I'd feel like I had peeled away one layer of self-hatred.
Wow. Yeah.
Everything was sort of an uphill battle, but it was an exciting time, so we didn't mind it. We were also had a lot more energy. Coffee house. Rings a bell, but...
In the spring of 72, it says, you describe in this article how you are going to jail.
Oh, uh-huh.
And then, while you're in there, it appears like, you know, some women continued on.
Okay.
With the group, right?
Okay.
And the counseling and the continued, you say, and the speaking in the schools continued.
Yeah, of course.
And it was during that time, apparently, where you were in jail, that the school board outlawed gay speakers in the public schools.
Right.
And you say here that lesbians went to attend the school board meeting and protest that.
Right.
And they got a fair amount of media coverage.
Right.
Do you remember any of this?
No.
Okay.
I was in jail.
I know.
What do I remember?
So this whole start of that school board thing actually happens while you're in jail.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah.
Well, actually, no. I mean, we had all been speaking in schools, and then all of a sudden, this proclamation came down from the school superintendent saying that homosexuality is crime, therefore homosexuals are criminals, therefore we can't have them in the schools.
Oh, okay.
And then people began to do things.
Yeah. We'll have to do the school board story some other time.
Yeah. Okay, good. Let's not.
I'm looking at the clock here.
You know who collected a lot of it? Oh, he's probably not there anymore. There was this guy.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Sue Goldblum would know his name. I don't remember his name. He actually went and collected all this stuff about the school board race.
Really?
And he got the school board to the current Madison school board to issue like an apology.
Yeah, like in 2001.
Yeah.
So, and you were supposed to come, and then it was 9/11.
Yeah, see that? Yes. It was really, that was, no, never mind. Yeah, it was really upsetting. For many different reasons, on many levels.
Yeah.
Right. But he did collect a lot of information. I sent him a lot of stuff. He had a lot of stuff. Sue Goldblum has a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
She's also, I mean, she was involved in all of this.
Okay. Yeah, I should really ask Sue for an interview.
She might have a better memory than me.
And then, so how does, you leave town after, in 73?
Yeah, the summer of 73.
Summer of 73.
After I lost.
Okay. And so, thinking of the Madison Lesbians, what happens, where is it at when you leave? Do you
when
sense?
I leave, there's no more Madison Lesbians.
Mm-hmm.
But there are all these sort of beginning, all these networks, all these different groups.
Mm-hmm.
Of women.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Whole Woman is still publishing. There is a lot more. I can't tell you exactly what it wasn't. When we started Madison Gay Sisters, we were the only group.
Yeah.
And it changed.
Mm-hmm.
There were lots of different groups of women and men, gay men doing things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the run for school board certainly put a lot of visibility on the lesbian and gay movement.
Yeah. I can't imagine.
It did.
Yeah.
I think I lost 10 years of my life doing that.
Well, and Judy, I mean, you were like so out there when there was, I mean, had Elaine Noble been elected yet? I don't think so.
I was the first. I think I was the first candidate to run in Madison.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the early ones.
Wasn't around.
Yeah.
Paul Soglin wasn't even mayor.
Wow.
Paul Soglin wanted me to be like to endorse his campaign. He endorsed my campaign.
Did he really?
Yeah, he did. Yeah.
Was he an alder at that point?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so did Carl Armstrong. That was my favorite. From jail.
Did he really?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
It was very sweet.
Wow.
Unbidden, it's because I had a, there was a group called the Wisconsin Alliance.
Yeah.
And they were sort of a political group, sort of a socialist group, did a bunch of different things. And they used to run candidates. They used to do political campaigns. And they ran this woman for sheriff.
Yeah.
Her poster was her in a wheel. She's a short woman, very unassuming, long hair.
You know,
and we all look so young then.
Yeah.
And she's in a rocking chair, holding a big rifle.
Toby Emmer.
Toby Emmer, of course.
Right.
Toby Emmer for sheriff.
That's right.
So the Wisconsin Alliance actually, I think it was probably the first solidarity that they ever at big time for a gay candidate. They basically said, we're going to take around your flyers with our flyers.
Yeah.
And they were great.
That was for Toby, you mean?
Yes, Toby Emery. You know Toby?
No, I've never met her.
Oh, she's wonderful.
Is she really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Is she, now people tell me she's in New York?
She's in Brooklyn.
She's in Brooklyn.
Last night, she's teaching.
Okay.
I haven't seen her in 10 years.
Yeah. And how out was she at the time?
Not.
Okay.
She came out later.
Okay.
She came out when I moved to Milwaukee.
Okay.
She was straight, actually. How old was she? She was straight.
At the time that she ran?
Yeah.
She identified as straight.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So it wasn't, she wasn't running as a lesbian candidate like you were?
Right.
Okay, got it.
There was no one in the Wisconsin Alliance who identified as being gay.
Got it, okay. Because I have had people tell me that story as if she was a lesbian running for sheriff.
No.
But I haven't found any. When I go look at the newspapers, it doesn't seem like that's what's happening.
Right. Yeah. No, it wasn't until years later.
Okay. Got it. Oh yeah, that her poster is priceless.
Oh no, it is. It's wonderful. Yeah. It was a great poster.
Yeah. Wow. This is helpful. What do you want to add? What am I forgetting to ask about?
I don't know. I don't know. I'll have to. I wish this was the beginning of the summer. I would go and look at all my old writings and find something to tell you. But off the top of my head, I can't think of anything.
I'm trying.
Really can't.
So you came. You came to Madison in when?
I came to Madison in September of 70.
September.
Late August of 70. I graduated from high school in June of 70.
Got it. And then you leave in the summer of 73.
Right.
Got it.
And I did sort of hightail it after the... I mean, there were a lot of different issues, but it was... The campaign totally burned me out.
Yeah.
It was very difficult. I mean, I felt that I had become so public, I had absolutely no privacy whatsoever. And that was not okay.
Wow, really?
And the demands, I mean, it was... It really... I think in some ways it was sort of the beginning or the of sort of the radical electoral politics in Madison.
Okay.
And everybody seemed to be jumping in, and everybody wanted me. Paul Sozin wanted me to head up a gay committee or be his like gay advisor or something like that. And somebody else wanted me to be something else, and it was like, no, thank you. Not what I want to do.
Yeah. So you got pigeonholed in a way.
Well, I got pigeonholed, but also, to me, it was the struggle. The election was not to get elected. I mean, Paul Soglin and the rest, all power to them, they ran to get elected.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't run. I mean, there was no way I was going to get elected.
Mm-hmm.
Thank goodness I wasn't elected. But I ran on the issue. It was a political struggle. It was using sort of the electoral arena to put something out there in a very clever way.
Mm-hmm.
Because they had banned lesbians and gays speaking in the schools, but they couldn't ban me as a candidate
right.
from speaking in the schools. So I got to speak in the schools. High school students got to come and interview me.
Wow.
For the school newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
I got to go on TV.
Yeah.
I got to appear in front of the school board.
Mm-hmm.
So it really, it was sort of back, we're in your face.
Yeah.
And I was really coming from, I had this whole group of mostly women, but some men, who were all part of the campaign.
Yeah. So many things you guys are doing, the integrating the bars, the run, you know,
yeah.
is like, it's all... It's like what, it's like ACT UP.
Right.
It was.
Yeah. ACT UP, I mean, right.
Although ACT UP really was just, was GLF, GAA ZAPS, right? I mean, it's all, I guess I shouldn't, that's the wrong way to characterize it, really.
Well, it was before ACT UP, so.
Yeah.
It was sort of, pre-ACT UP. And it was really, again, Gay Liberation Front chose those three names because it supported a political struggle going on in Vietnam.
Yeah.
And identified with that struggle.
Yeah.
So, of course, we were going to be cutting edge, radical, in your face, annoying, all those different things. And we were. We were a challenge to the straight establishment, but we were also a challenge to the closeted lesbian and gay establishment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And part of me, you know, thinks, well, I wish we could have figured out a way to keep the communications open a little more.
Mm.
Because it was hard for people to... It took many, many years. I mean, 10 years after I saw people coming out who I never thought would be public.
Mm-hmm.
It just... They needed time.
Yeah.
And they needed it to be a little more popular. And they needed... Well, it's job security. It's all sorts of different things. Who wanted to be the first one fired from, you know, University of
right.
Wisconsin-Madison. Nobody wanted that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Lesbian switchboard.
Yeah, lesbian switchboard, yeah.
I was thinking that's one of the, like, the outgrowths of
yes.
Madison lesbians, right?
Yeah.
Is that a fair characterization?
Well, I think it's an outgrowth of
the
of
movement.
The counts, of the informal helpline that we had.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the people, that's it, people began to build these different things,
mm-hmm.
which was great. And it gave people more, you know, like Whole Woman. I mean, there were more activities and more projects that people could be involved in.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lesbian community starting,
mm-hmm.
an open, and somewhat, you know, it ran the gamut. There were some people closeted, some people out, but there were many more things to plug into.
Yeah. And the back door?
Oh, yeah, the back door, the bar. That was after I left, but I did visit it a few times.
Okay, so you don't remember going there as a...
No, I didn't, because it didn't exist.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I think it existed when I was in Milwaukee.
I think it opened like in December of 72.
Did it?
But I get the feeling, what people have told me is that at first there wasn't a women's night. And that women didn't feel very at home.
That could be what
happened. They had to go ask Rodney to make a women's night.
That could be what happened.
Yeah.
Okay. And I was probably, if there was something like that, I was probably involved in it. I think later on, though, it became more of an institution, right?
Yeah. Yeah, Thursday nights was like women's night. And
right. I think I vaguely remember that.
Hmm.
Again, my memory.
Judy.
I know. I mean, we did a lot. We were in the bars a lot.
Yeah.
What bars they were, I don't remember.
Yeah.
But we were young. We were drinking. We were I was still smoking cigarettes. Everything was still, we were invulnerable.
Yeah. Okay, I want to be mindful of time, and it's 11:29.
Oh, my gosh.
Which means you've got your next appointment.
Oh, yeah, I do, unfortunately.
I know.
My poor daughter is, like, in the other room going, gee, Mom, I don't remember what you look like. I don't remember what you sound like. Okay.
Judy, thank you so much.
Oh, sure.
I'm so appreciative.
Sure. And if there's other stuff, I feel like I've given you almost like we've been just looking at a drop of water.
Yeah.
It's just a tiny little reflection of all the things that have happened, so.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there were many things that happened after I left, and probably there were things that I wasn't involved in.
Yeah.
Before.
Well, I know, yeah, there's so much. But maybe we can, well, I don't know. It'll probably take a while for me to transcribe this and figure out what to do with this.
Okay.
Because I'm actually, or how to, like, futz it, you know, help it into something, into this other piece. And I'm technically supposed to be defending my dissertation proposal in a month.
Oh, okay.
So I might wait until after
that.
And
what is your dissertation? What is it on?
Oh, I'm studying these classes that I've been teaching. I've been doing experiential classes on, for 5 years I taught a class on civil rights movement where the whole class went in the middle of the semester down south.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for 10 days, and we met with people,
great,
you know, in Montgomery and Birmingham and Selma and, you know, who were involved in the movement.
Wow.
Which led to then the last couple of years we've done the gay version of that.
Uh-huh.
Which I told you about.
Right.
And I'm interviewing.
And you went to New York.
She went to New York and D.C., yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, met with Carla J. and Jeb.
Uh-huh, you met with Jeb, yeah, an old friend of mine.
Yeah, you know, all the, and, yeah, and, anyway, did a bunch, you know, had a day at Stonewall and met with a bunch of participants there, and we recreated the first picket in front of the White House with Lily Vincennes and Frank Kameny, and
oh my gosh,
yeah, all this craziness. Yeah, it was wonderful. But anyway, so I'm interviewing two cohorts of kids from the queer trips and two cohorts from the African American.
You should have come to San Francisco. What's wrong with you?
Well, I know, but I know, you know, we have to take a bus, and it's just
forget it.
It's just easier. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah. I do know what you mean.
Yeah. Believe me.
I know. The bus is enough to D.C. and to New York, I'll tell you. It's really true.
All right, I got to let you go.
Okay. All right. Well, take care, Scott.
Okay, Judy, I'll be in touch.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.